We'll go ahead and call this second monthly meeting for the Port of Port Townsend for Wednesday, August 27th to order. We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Larry threw down a gauntlet today of a 28-minute meeting, is that right?
We timed it out, and that's all it took.
28-minute.
Practice run.
Okay, so let's go to the approval of the agenda. Everyone seen the agenda, are there any additions or corrections?
I'd like to add something to first reading, that's Port Organization Chart.
Okay, any other additions? Approve, I make a motion, we approve the agenda as modified?
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, consent agenda, you've all looked at the consent agenda? I move that we approve the consent agenda?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, public comments not related to the agenda. Bertram?
I have two quick comments. One is that with the locks on the, garbage, it's amazing how little garbage is in the, at least the D one, all the time, it's pretty empty, it just shows how much the patrons have really been using that. Probably goes the same for the showers and laundry as well, we've probably been subsidizing those for a long time. And the second comment is that in two meetings now, we've requested, and it's been said that they would take care of the diving parking, but it continues to take three spaces, and people avoid using it, myself included, because you don't want to have a confrontation, but it's getting filled up. He's parking in there, and he's putting his flag between the two of them, and then cones on the other, and one put no parking sign. Now, you said that it's going to be taken care of, is there a problem that we don't know about?
No, okay.
It needs to be taken care of.
We've talked to him.
Working on it, it just needs to, talk to him.
He's been talked to, sir.
Yeah.
Shouldn't take 2 months to do that.
Any other public comments? Marshall?
Yeah. I'll just read these real quick here, if you don't mind. It's just a reiteration, what I've redundant of what I already talked about, but maybe in the vein of what this gentleman just mentioned about the timeframe. Keep that in mind, yeah, because the second fire at Karen Broom's boat was in April of 2013. And at the second fire, the fire chief, Jim, wanted to discuss the issue of flammable and illegal use of extension cord at Karen's work site. According to the document, Doug Lockhart would follow up and check it out. Okay, there was a few issues there. The fire chief, Jim, was going to also stop by, but there is no documentation on that. So, who knows? And this is all referring back to our agreement that we all signed, that you wrote up, tenancy agreement. And I'm going to paraphrase Article 7, or Paragraph 7. "The port assumes no liability for loss by fire, the elements, vandalism, or other causes not the result of the exercise of reasonable care by the agents of the port." Now, let me remind you, the fire that was on my boat was on September 27th. That's, what is that, 4 or 5 months from the April fire, which was the second fire. And along those lines, Article 12, paraphrase that. "Owner agent will allow the port or its agents free access at all times to his boat for the purpose of inspection, fighting fires, etc." So, in other words, the fire that occurred on the, in April, her door remained locked. Actually, her door was locked for 2 years. And nothing was done about it. No follow-up on, you know, no follow-up on the April fire, and to, and then I'll read something else here, and also, Carnes talked about this in the newspaper, and I'll tell you exactly what he said. It says, "The wooden frame covered in plastic and secured by a padlock. That violates court rules that access to both cannot be hindered, according to Carnes. The ability to contain the fire was hindered by a locked fence around the boat." So, in other words, it cost me $65,000. That's how much damage. Now, I want to read one more thing here. This is Karen Broom's eviction notice. I got this from Freedom Information. Anyway, "Dear Miss Broom," this is written by Mr. Crockett, "after much thought and evaluation of the circumstances surrounding the conditions of your vessel," this is 2 weeks after the fire that damaged my boat, the third fire, "the treasure hunter, I have decided to require that you remove your vessel from port property within 30 days. I do this per paragraph 12 of the yard tenancy agreement," which paragraph 12 essentially says, if you don't pay your bill in 2 months, you're out of here. Which I might remind you that no one has ever been evicted from this, according to the records, for anything besides not paying their bill. That's going to be one of the issues. So, you know, that's my comment.
Okay, thank you for your comments, Marshall.
You're welcome.
Okay, second reading, action items, day boats and the Scow Bay boats lease.
Jim.
So as you remember last meeting, we talked to you about the splitting of Bay Boats lease and having the assumption of half of it be marched out here. We set the meeting here today to take over the building portion of that lease. We have since had an agreement with Aaron Day, and I've included that amendment in your packet along with a survey map showing you exactly the area that Mr. Day will be occupying. And you've already reviewed the Mark Stout lease. One of the things Carolyn brought up today, and aptly so, is we failed to come to an agreement with Mr. Stout on how he's going to handle stormwater on that building, because it's a galvanized roof. Al has been working with Mr. Stout on a system that will allow him, Mr. Stout, to put in gutters and downspouts. It will go into one of our stormwater totes and be treated. We didn't have time after Carolyn brought that up to me this afternoon to actually get an agreement in place, but I have since talked to Mark and he's agreed to doing this. So what I'd like to ask the commission is if they would approve the lease pending an agreement on a stormwater treatment agreement with staff.
Does anybody have any problems with that?
And if you remember, in our settlement agreement with Smith Lowney, we had language that as leases in the boatyard, building leases, come up for either renewal or get canceled and a new tenant comes in, that we would include language that would address the rain runoff of the roofs. So.
We bear the cost?
Mm-hmm.
We bear the cost on it?
We have 18 stormwater totes that we're building right now, and one of those totes, Al, is already reserved for that building. Now, we've agreed to put an infrastructure, but Mark will be responsible for the maintenance of that infrastructure. So when the media needs to be changed out, that's not only that building, that's every building in the port that we're going to be treating. It's the tenant's responsibility to do the media change.
Who do we check the media, or does he check the media?
When we check our numbers that are coming off the roof, and we can tell when it's saturated, we'll know that it's time to... You know, the engineers said this is new technology we're going down, so the engineers really don't know. Is it going to be 2 years? Going to be 3 years?
We'll do the sample, and then if it's starting to degrade, then we'll send the letter saying the this needs to be replaced in the next 90 days or something of that sort. So.
The way I see this is that this is all new, and what we're doing is we're protecting our boatyard permit by taking care of the runoff off the roofs, and we're supplying the totes, and Mark's going to supply the downspouts and
the
gutters, and then we're going to start monitoring it. Eventually, we're going, right now, we're just doing it so that we can stay in business. In the future, since we realize that this is going to be an ongoing cost of operations of doing business, we're going to start shifting that and building it into the lease where the where it's more clearly defined who pays for the tote. Right now, we're giving them to them, if I'm not mistaken, and who changes the media. But right, I think that's a discussion for after we've had a little bit of trial under our belt.
Obviously, if it's a brand new building, a brand new lease, it's easier to craft, you know, new language for that. It's when you have these existing buildings and you're transferring, you know, leases from one to another, that sort of thing. But I think, rather than having them coat the roof, the totes are a far better system to actually treat the water and protect the yard. So.
So, Mark, you're good with kind of the ambiguous situation in terms of how often you might have to change the media and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I guess so. It's just nobody, we don't really know what's going to happen, whether it's 2 years or 10 years.
Right.
I guess we're all, I don't know how I looked at the system over here, under the main building over here, and I don't know how old that is.
It's been there for a few months.
Right.
I mean, what's the cost of changing the media, do you think?
Well, Al thinks it's about $1,500. So it could be, if it's 2 years, it's $750 a year, or 4 years, $1,500, just to change the biochar and that.
Yeah. Does the language reflect a cost in there, or just says biochar?
Well, that's what Eric, Al, and I are going to work on tomorrow, trying to figure out and craft an agreement that makes sense for everybody on how to do this. So if we can get a commission approval tentatively when this agreement is in place, that Carolyn can review, then we can move forward. And right now, we just didn't have time, and I really don't want to wait 2 weeks unless we really want to do that.
So we're approving this lease with an amendment that's going to address the stormwater, and then we'll be able to look at that amendment 2 weeks from now and see if we like it.
And once you come up with the language, we can put it in your box or something, just so you're aware of, you know, what's on. So.
I make a motion, we do that.
Mm-hmm. I second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Can I just ask one question? Is that approving both
the lease.
Leases, both the lease and the lease amendment?
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Next up, on the first reading for discussion only is the Big Quilcene Estuary and Stream Channelization.
This, and Pete has been in on this because he's actually been down there in Quilcene and looked at it. The Hood Canal Enhancement Group, the last 5 years, maybe 6 years, have been doing a multi-phase project of the big end of the Quill River. The first couple of phases, they removed some of the dikes that were built back in the early 1900s to kind of channel the river and make more land available for farming, etc. And so they took those dikes out for the most part. And there was some concern. We had probably a half a dozen meetings with Coast Seafood there, with us there, and the enhancement group with concerns about sedimentation and possibly changing the temperature of the Quilcene Bay, because if it starts to fill in and the water becomes more shallow, then the temperature is going to rise, which could affect the ability to grow oysters, etc. So anyway, actually everything was going pretty good until recently they started this last phase. And it caught us all off guard. None of us knew they were doing this. And essentially they're digging out the delta at the end of the Big Quill. And a great possibility resulting from this is the river channel itself is probably going to move.
They're digging just south of the dike.
Right. In fact, here's an aerial. This is the main channel of the river right here. And this is the project site. course, the bay goes this way, you know, our marina's down, a couple miles down. So nobody really knows what's going to happen as, you know, the river changes course. Right now, it kind of goes over to the east side of the bay. If it shifts over to the west, it'll dramatically, we're assuming it'll dramatically change the sedimentation, which endangers the shellfish aspects, but also the entrance of our marina. And we dredged that at about $200,000 a couple of two, 3 years ago. And just under normal circumstances as is, we're probably going to have to go back down there in the next within the next 5 years and dredge it again. We see some maintenance dredging, maybe not as big as we did before. But this could cause it to happen a lot quicker.
So when you say digging out the delta, they're not digging the delta out. They're going to leave the delta in place. What they're removing is the levee that keeps the water from flowing.
No, they're actually digging the
delta. Actually digging a big trench right here south of the delta.
If you go down there, go over to Wally Peterson's progress where they're taking the dirt. And when I went down there, there's already several hundred truckloads. Truckloads of dirt.
Well, and the river is already migrating underneath the dike into the hole they're digging. It's full of water as they dig it. But, and it's not seawater, it's fresh water.
And Reeves down there, who bid on the project, didn't get the project, is aware of what the contract said, and all the siltation fencing and things like that, he claims, aren't there. I went down there to inspect the site, but they had a locked gate across the road, and I couldn't get down there. I could see that weird RV down there, but you actually went down there and walked out there, so I don't know. I talked to John Petrie from the Coast Seafood. They're very concerned. They wrote the letter that you obviously have a copy of. And they had an agreement where they would be notified in advance of any future projects, which apparently didn't happen this time. We did check with the county. The county is aware of the project. They apparently have all their permits.
I actually ran into Dave Sullivan in the store. He was not aware of the project.
Yeah, yeah. DCD is, but I'm right. Sure they didn't report it.
Yeah. And they were having actually a meeting with Salmon Enhancement about something else. So he was going to bring that up to them.
So they have a permit? Because to me, the way that these habitat restorations are supposed to proceed is that you remove artificially produced, you know, man-made levees to let the river take its natural course. And a delta is the natural course of a river. If they're digging the delta out, that's not going along the natural scheme of things. So I guess I'm confused.
Well, a delta today is not the natural delta because the stream bed was modified 80 to 100 years ago as these various dikes were built by the farmers.
The goal of this, when you read this, the goal of this project is not to let the river find its original course, is to create salt marsh ponds that probably they think probably existed hundreds of years ago, which enhances the salmon. It's where salmon can, is that right? Where salmon can.
That's how I understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of it's very ambiguous because you don't know if they're trying to switch the shells around a little bit. It's kind of obvious that digging south the dike is going to cause the river to head that way because now that there's water migrating under the dike. So eventually, just by the natural process, the dike is going to give way and the river will.
Was there been any answer to their request to cease and desist?
Not that I'm aware of.
And I reviewed the information you sent me and then Sue turned it off. Most of that, and I went through it, and I couldn't find any evidence of a hydraulic survey.
Yeah.
So, and well, to state that it's going to, you know, it's going to jeopardize our marina without a hydraulic survey, we really don't have anything to base that on other than, you know, an assumption. And that may not be the case.
And I don't know whether a hydraulic survey would be required in this, what do you think, Jim?
I wouldn't think it would be.
Because it's not out in the water. They're digging on land. Obviously with the intent that the water invades that area to create the marsh. I think before we make any decisions, I'd like to do a little more checking with the county and see just Yeah, should there have been one, why wasn't there one, that sort of question.
Corps of Engineers did issue a permit too, so that's been done.
But they actually had?
Well, but I have a concern in regards to their letter that was sent to the Salmon Coalition group that included us in basically their complaint and their assistance on the cease and desist that this basically stated that we have, I mean, I understand there's a concern about sedimentation in the entrance to our marina, but again, we don't know, we don't have any evidence, we don't have any hydraulic survey, we don't have anything that could prove or disprove that that this would have any influence on port property. So I have a little bit of concern of Coast Seafood, including us, in their letter to the Salmon Group to cease and desist, when really we don't have anything to base any opinion on as far as it being a problem for you know, port property. I was curious why Port Townsend was mentioned in that letter.
Well, probably because I met with John when I was briefed on it. I raised that concern, not knowing what the sedimentation would result in, that if it did change, you know, there is that possibility it could come down to the marina.
Well, in Coast concern, when the Little Quill was done, there was quite a bit of discussion about their pickup tubes. And if the sedimentation increased, they would have to move their tubes farther out. And didn't John indicate that there was some sort of an agreement that that would happen?
It's included here.
In that list, yeah.
In the cease and desist letter, it makes mention of that,
yeah,
agreement.
Well, right after that, there's the actual agreement from 2008. It's a two-page agreement.
Yeah.
It talks about that.
And 15 and 16.
I think the big thing is communication. They went ahead and did things without consulting anybody.
Well, I think in Coast defense, I mean, the fact that the other party is willing to put that into the agreement indicates there's some agreement that there could be some sedimentation issues going on if they're willing to help Coast move their pipes further out in the bay. I think the other one that's interesting too is the response of the Gallants, which is pretty quiet. I haven't talked to them at all. But I mean, most of JD's research is done on the sediment, you know, the clearness of the water. So if this changes course and it does sediment up the bay, it seems like that would be an even bigger issue than his argument with Coast.
Well, I find it curious that we you know, this quite a bit of time has gone by and there's still no, I mean, we don't even know if there's been a response from the Salmon Group to the cease and desist.
Right.
And that's really, why, I mean, we're kind of.
That's why I don't want to do anything tonight other than continue to check on it and check with the county and see if they've heard anything. Check with Coast again. You know, the other thing about the reason why we're in the letter is because we were at the table with all the discussions 5-6 years ago, too, on this. And to the extent that we actually helped pay for some very large filters for Coast that are our property, that should Coast go away, filtration system stays there. And so we actually have.
So can you briefly describe those and what the cost was?
It's a public infrastructure grant that we sponsored from the county.
It was a PIF, we got the money.
I think it was $17,000 if I remember.
I was going to say.
Somewhere around there, the PIF money put in.
And there's a series, they're down there on the water side of the building where they have their big tanks out on the spit there, kind of in the back of those tanks. There's a series of maybe 5 or 6 of these. They're about this big around, and maybe 4 feet high.
These are sediment filters?
Yeah.
So this is for the water intake,
The water intake. And the other concern, of course, that was in their letter, is besides the sedimentation, it's the bacteria that would come down with it. Yeah, you know, you've got a century of cows and sheep and pigs and everything else grazing and doing their business up there, and suddenly all this stuff is, you know, coming down the bay. So, but let's do some more checking and report back.
I think you'd be If anybody goes down there and they have a chance to go and take a look at this, it's pretty startling. I mean, no one would be allowed to go out a giant excavator and start digging in the tidelands on Quilosing Bay, except for the government. So the fact that they got a permit, that's great. It is pretty startling to see them actually out there. I can see removing dikes. I know what that's about. But to go out and dig a monstrous hole in the middle of this area is...
That's surprising how much dirt was up on Peterson's property.
It's well, amazing.
This, a similar thing is planned for between Indian Island and Marrowstone, and with a similar type of redirection of a channel, and actually try and recreate a channel that they assume was there, you know, when Vancouver came here.
Right.
And they're, as a matter of fact, they're using some of his records to try and recreate that. And so they're going to be doing a similar thing there, and it's the same group.
And they're a favorite. They get the money. Yeah. Gives them grant money, weapon money. It's a favorite child. So.
And which group is that?
This Salmon Enhanced, Hood Canal Enhancement Group.
Okay. Okay, so that's discussed. Now next is the new item B, Port Organizational Chart.
Right. If you remember in our walkabouts down at Point Hudson, we talked a little bit about staffing levels, and I sense, you know, that acknowledgement from all the commissioners that we need to make sure, both from a customer service standpoint, but also from a maintenance standpoint, that, you know, we were adequately staffed where it counts. And we've kind of already addressed the yard and the maintenance issue, but if we're approaching the end of the summer, and we would like to bring on one more mortgage clerk full time. Right now, we bring on three part-time during the summer. We go to 7 days a week. And after Labor Day, we let them go and we go back. But it's getting to the point where, you know, if somebody's sick or wants to take vacation, we really need one more. So this org chart reflects that. And we'd have to advertise it in-house first. We've got a couple of really excellent summer hires that I think would probably want to apply. We already know the software system and kind of the routine. But per my delegation of authority, I can hire personnel based on a organizational chart as approved by the commission. So that's why, you know, would like to give you a chance to review this and vote on it the next meeting.
Why are the dotted lines from the commissioners to the auditor and the court attorneys? Why are they not just normal lines?
Because those are appointed positions, not hired positions.
And the auditor, you know, Amy is dual-headed. She's the finance director, and as such, she works directly for me, but as the auditor for RCW, works for you.
Right. And so, as the auditor, which is what that box indicates, why is that line dotted and not solid? I don't understand the significance.
Well, that's the typical way on org charts that, you know, if it's not a, what am I searching for the right words here? I guess it could be. It's all been dotted, but that's not a good answer.
I mean, to me, it infers that there's some difference between the relationship between commissioners and directive and all everyone else except for the auditor and their court attorney, but it doesn't describe what that difference is.
We can make it solid.
This chair also memorializes John Green's half-time efforts working with Al and maintenance, and Charlie's half-time position with maintenance in the yard. In order to get efficiencies, we've taken people and split their functions, so this kind of memorializes that too, which hasn't been in previous charts.
Who's the other guy, second guy?
Charlie Shaw.
Yeah. Oh, that's that little box between environmental and maintenance?
Yeah, that's John Green. John Green works half-time for Al and half-time for Larry Ozzie. And Charlie Shaw works half-time for Larry Ozzie and half-time for Doug.
Could, Could one reason be why it started is because that auditor is not a separate employee, it's a combined function of the finance.
It could be. But no real decision tonight, just wanted to tee it up.
This won't be a full FTE addition because we would reduce summer help from three people to two people. So it'd be more like three-quarter time addition to our pre-care budget.
We'd only bring two people on next summer, rather than three people.
Okay. Any more on the first reading discussions? We've gone over our 28 minutes.
No.
Okay, now, action items. We've already talked about the contract for roofing of building 308. I think we talked about that last time, didn't we?
We did. And we're at that point where they need to get going while the weather's holding. It was sales tax. It's a little over $18,000, which is above my spending limit.
Okay.
For here.
So I can't see any problems with it. I move that we approve the contract for $18,748 to whoever the concrete construction.
Yeah, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next, the IT contract. Amy.
This is taking our current IT contract, which is on an hourly basis, as the IT folks that we contract with have time to come see us, they do. So what this does is take us to a day a week of service, so we have more regular service, additional service, and as you can see from the numbers, you know, sometimes they've been here not at all during a month, sometimes they've been here 2 days, so this contract would take it to 4 days a month, and there's only a $5,000 difference there. So, just under $5,000. So it really just adds additional services for our IT needs.
And I had an in-depth discussion with Kevin as to why some things are working the way they're supposed to, and he said that that would be helped by the fact that we get IT guys here on a regular basis where they can devote some thoughtful time to solving problems like archiving old emails before the changeover and so forth.
Well, plus, you know, because Kevin could then plan that, okay, every Thursday we got the IT person here, you can work his schedule. Right now, we're kind of...
So if you were grading this IT company that's been here, what would the grade be? A to Z, A to F?
I mean, I'd probably give them a B. I mean, you know, they've done what they could in the amount of time. You know, we started this thinking we needed somebody a day a month.
Right.
Clearly we're beyond a day a month service. So, you know, I know there's been frustration, but it's just with the contract we had right now, they didn't have the time to do it. You know, but when they do come in, they get done what we, you know, what the fire is at that point in time. You know, we have to gauge based on what the biggest fire is that day.
Well, it's kind of like when I bring a mechanic in, if I bring a C mechanic in, it's going to take him 2 days to fix something. If I bring an A mechanic in, it's going to take him 5 hours.
Yeah, so, and you know, and I think having him here a day a week, it will definitely improve the service.
And we'll have a dedicated person, essentially, from that team who will understand our systems and who has what. You know, we're in a small community here, so there's not a lot of...
Is this a local?
They're out of Bremerton. The gal that comes here is from Hallsbo, so they work with all of the school districts in Jefferson, Clallam, Kitsap, and Mason County, as well as several fire districts. They took over some of Dave's contracts, like the WSU Extension. I know they were doing some work with them, whether or not they still are.
So they're kind of like the only game in town for a situation like us?
One of the only.
Yeah, I don't know. The county has their own IT, and we talked to them about us kind of piggybacking on that, and they said no.
They meaning the IT company or the county?
The county.
I mean,
IT.
It's their own in-house IT. Yeah. It's not a private company they're hiring.
So.
Same with the city. They have their own.
You know, a lot of ports have gone to hiring their own IT person. I don't think we're at that position yet, you know, because obviously if we hired an IT person full-time with benefits and all that, it'd be far more than 20,000, so.
Cool.
I'd recommend we give this a shot and, review how it works and if we need to change something.
One question I had on this contract, it looks like they took this contract from right out of their school district thing because they were always called the district instead of the port. And, I mean, we're a port district, but I'm looking at Appendix B and it says, appendix is not applicable to this contract. And I assume it means Appendix B because there's other appendices that apparently are applicable. So I'm not sure what that heading meant, but then I went ahead and talked about electronic mail on a centralized OESD 114 server. Well, that's not applicable, is it? We have our email on our servers.
And that's why they said this appendix is not applicable, because we've switched to the OWA client. It's in the cloud, so they don't have to manage the email server like they do with other entities.
So why did they just even include this at all? I just delete that page. I mean, because to me, it just, I read that over and thought, oh, they're going to have electronic mail on a centralized server, but then I also read another place where they're going to maintain our servers and have electronic mail there, and they have, in here they talk about filtering spam and administration of anti-spam services, but they don't talk about any place else.
Yeah, I mean, the Appendix B definitely does not apply. We can have them redo that and just label Appendix C as Appendix B. You know, it's managing the firewall is the Appendix C.
Well, what I saw in Appendix, assume Appendix B, they just left out the B, is that it talks about filtering spam, and I noticed that that's something that I had no problems with until we got changed over. Now I'm getting a lot of emails that I don't want to get. And also, in my older one, the M. Damon, I had a place where I could go to see which mail had gotten caught in the spam filter. And I found that some people who were trying to email me that had a goofy email address that someone could consider spam got trapped in there. And I haven't really found that in this one. And so I see that language in the Appendix B, which isn't applicable, but I don't see that language in the contract that we're having.
Well, and I guess, again, it's because the email server is not, you know, we'll just have to have them look, because I don't get any spam on my email at all. It goes into the spam folder. So I think it's just how they're set up mobile versus on a desktop. So it's a conversation that I just need to have with Deanne.
Yeah, I get maybe a half a dozen on my desktop the course of a week.
In your actual inbox or in your spam box?
In my inbox.
I okay. do, but it's pretty, I get a lot, most of it's filtered.
Nowhere near what it used to be.
Yeah. Right. Manageable. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll just.
I guess I have the same reservations that Pete did as I've expressed to you earlier, and that was just made more, you know, noticeable when I saw that they included an appendix. So they, you know, I mean, this is a contract. They put it in there. They didn't even label which appendix it is. They left it in there instead of taking the 2 or 3 minutes to remove it and then, you know, clarify this. Because as it is now, they talk about having spam filtering, but now we don't have it, I don't think. I couldn't find it anywhere else in the contract. I'm having an issue with spam. And I don't know. I guess I'm disappointed that they're the only game in town, too, because I think I'd give them like a C. And unfortunately, I'm not, the only way that we're really going to determine whether or not they're a B is to give them the benefit of having more time to come in here and try this out. But then if they do come in here and try this out, we're stuck with them for a year unless they do some egregious things that we can't live with, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm sure this is the standard contract that they use.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're making it a contract for a new business, like with a port, you wouldn't think you want to dig out a school contract and just say, oh, put an X through this one. I mean, you know.
But you're contracting with the school district.
Yeah.
They are
basically
a school district.
We're not going to be using their OESD number 114 server, so why would they even include that page in there?
I suspect that they probably are kind of divvying out this service and making it available to other public agencies because you can piggyback and do an interlocal agreement.
And they actually call themselves that. I think they got confused because if you look at the first paragraph, it's between.
I understand that.
Yeah. Okay.
But we're not using any of their OESD servers.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh.
So it was probably just a kind of a lazy drafting kind of thing.
Bertram.
Steve, I couldn't agree with you more about what you're saying about you have a group that's B or C, and here you're signing a contract for a year. And so that, I since you're the buyer, I would say set a time of 3 months or something. And if they don't improve with the increased service, then why be saddled with these people? It's just a waste of money. The second thing is that you should start documenting the complaints that you're all having and see if they're ironing those things out so that you actually have some data to show them. Because you don't want to throw good money after bad.
Or just approve it subject to revising the termination provision to provide for a quicker trigger. 30 days or so.
Well, why not just ask for a revision and just look at it again?
That's what I think I'd rather do.
I would too.
Mm-hmm. You said, Steve, that it's not labeled Appendix B, but I show Appendix B here.
Well, no, it says next the line, appendix is not applicable to this contract. Right. Well, there's an Appendix A, B, and C. It doesn't say which one's not applicable. I assume it meant B because it's on the B line.
Right, that was my assumption. It's, you know, that didn't bother me. But, well, we just cleaned it up and bring it back.
Well, I think that we want, again, I think that we want to not get trapped in it. I mean, cleaning up the language to me was just a red flag, is if these guys were really on the A team, they would have taken that paragraph out. We wouldn't have it, you know. They'd want to make a good impression and make a good presentation to us, and they left it in there, and it doesn't have anything to do with us. And I've had some issues with them where they changed our email, and they said, oh, it would have been nice to say, you're not going to have an email for a while. They didn't tell me until suddenly I had people calling me up. How come you didn't respond to my email? I said, I didn't know that you just emailed me. You know, things like that tell me they're a B team, and I'm concerned that we're hiring a B team for a year or a C team for a year, and we don't really have a lot of recourse. So I think that the cleaning up that I'd like to see done is not just that. I mean, I can understand it too, but it should be clarified. But I think that a termination for breach might be shorter than that, or something, or
well, it gets them for breach. It might just be for
non-performance
service or something. You know.
And that we'll just have a termination at will. Yeah. On 30 days notice.
Yeah. How come it's an immediate action? Is there a big hurry to get this done, or?
They run off of a school year, so it's the start of their fiscal year come September 1st. So. I don't know that we'll get a year contract if we wait 2 weeks, but that's fine too. So, because they try to set their schedule and designate how many people they need and where they're going.
So if we bring this back in 2 weeks for a revision.
I don't know what their timing is.
Yeah.
For that. I can check with them.
Okay. I mean, as far as the operation of the port goes, I guess my concern, they're here to work on stuff.
Well, they'll still come.
I don't know what their schedule will be. You know, they'll come when they have time, where if we sign this starting September 1st, they would be here four times in September. So
right.
By not signing it, we might see them one day in September if they have that time.
Right. And if something needs to be fixed, it might not be fixed for a week or two until they can work into their schedule. So.
Right.
Okay,
let's get fully.
After that, the AWOS contracts.
Yeah, well, obviously you've already approved the AWOS. We've got our bids in. We already reported that the all-weather system for the actual equipment itself was a low bidder. The construction bid is in for $99,000. And we really only had, we had two bids, but one was we declared non-responsive. They didn't include all the information that they were required. This one company, out of Olympia did. So, they end up being the winner. It was interesting, as written here, nobody local wanted to bid on this. And we see that a lot. So we'd like to move ahead with this. There is one other small contract which will go off the small works roster, and that's for just digging the trench. You know, Reeves is going to bid on it. I don't know if Levitt and maybe some of the others might bid on it too. But, this is just to get this thing moving here and actually start building stuff. And again, keep in mind, we're paying $15,000. Bill?
Yeah, with regard to this contract, I think that while I'm gratified that all the local contractors are doing so well, but they don't need another $100,000. I really want to emphasize that this was done according to Hoyle, and that, you know, 6 months from now, when people come out of the woodwork and say, how come a local contractor didn't get this? You know, we're all on record as knowing that it went out and everybody had ample time and nobody local wanted the work.
And we get that every year. Sue and I join forces with the city and the county. We host a one-day session for contractors. Usually it's down at the old police station there. And where we go through the small works roster, how you get on the small works roster, what the rules are. You know, if you're working in the city, you got to have a city business license as well as your state business license, all those different things. Talk about prevailing wage, and I usually give a little briefing on what, you know, projects we think we might have in the coming year that would qualify for small works, and we never see those people again. You know, and there's roofers and painters and flooring people and electricians. But should
be noted, when we first started talking about this, we were at $400,000. This total project now, with Bill's help and a lot of work and staff time, the entire project is $308,000. So it's quite a reduction from $400,000. So we thank Bill and all the other team members contributed.
We're only on the hook for 5%.
Virgil.
I thought a lot about this subject after the last meeting with the painters, and the fact that you said that, you know, they don't want to go through the paperwork hassle. And I was thinking, yeah, I mean, since economic development is part of the port's mission, it seems to me, why couldn't you get the economic council to help set up a system to help local contractors with the paperwork so that they can provide an adequate contract for the port? I mean,
they provide classes and they really go out of their way, but you got to avail yourself of it.
Well, I was thinking that if you had a mailer to, say, painters, for example, that you could do this, and there is help for the paperwork through economic development, it might be that, you know, you would get people out, because I know we, like, they wanted to do things for the Navy, and Julia said it's just too much of a hassle to go through that, but it was good money, and you're paying $20,000 in kind to economic development, why not get those guys to help with that?
Even on the federal contracts, there's when I talked to the gentleman down in Bremerton, that will sit down with a contractor and help to do just that. But people still, part of the issue, we're dealing with we had this issue with the painters. They're so small and so cash strapped, when they do get a project, they don't have enough money in their bank account to go buy the materials they need for the project, i.e. the paint and brushes and everything else in this case. And there's been times, which I don't like doing it, you know, we actually front the money so that they can go get the paint, and then we obviously don't pay the rest of it until the project's done to our satisfaction. Yeah. But when you deal with a lot of state projects and the feds, you do the project first, and then you get your check.
The other issue here is materials is not the issue here. I mean, there is such a small amount of materials that are not provided by the...
That was just an example of one type thing.
The other issue, Bertram, is we're in a rural area, and there's not enough projects to keep this type of contractor around. Like, I did takeoffs for a landscaper in East Seattle, and, you know, there was a plethora of projects all the time. I mean, you go to the takeoff shop and just start pulling plans and doing takeoffs, and so you're constantly running bids. There just isn't that many bids to bid on. I mean, the city, the county, and us, and that's it, in the school, maybe, once in a while. So all of the local contractors that, you know, have any wherewithal, they're building, I mean, they're doing their own thing. So for them to kind of change up to move into a bid thing, it just isn't worth it for them to slow down and do a bid and get in the process.
Well, like on the painting, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
The contractors that were contacted didn't have time. They were too busy with jobs. That's why we only had one or two. I have one, I think, that was available for that paint job.
That's a problem with that specific trade because obviously you have about 4 months of weather to get all your paint done around. But.
So I make a motion to go ahead with this contract.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye. Good job, guys. Thank you very much for your hard work getting that number down.
Yeah, still got to build the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're time for staff comments.
Sure. I'm just continuing to work on the budget. I've gotten some preliminary numbers as far as potential property tax numbers. Jeff Chapman and Jack Westerman will be at the next workshop meeting to go over all of that with you guys.
We do that usually every year, tutorial on property tax.
And I finally got the Wooden Boat Festival schedule filled, and we've got one staff on each shift, and Brad also is working two evening shifts for us.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Brad. You get the tear down?
I'll get the golden key.
Yeah. A few quick things. Steve and Brad, thanks for being there this morning. You missed a good meeting with Bill Bryant, one of the commissioners from the Port of Seattle that sits on the Puget Sound Partnership. I think you learned a lot. He talked to me out in the parking lot afterwards. I really appreciated he spent about an hour in the conference room talking about stormwater and derelict vessels and all that. And then we walked the yard and showed him some of the things they were doing from the roof runoff totes to the big RX systems, the sand filters to the Steinbeck boat. And
do you want it?
Nobody wants it. I think that'll pay off, and we'll stay in touch with them and make sure he's got all the information he needs. Last week, I went over to SQUIM, the Governor's Blue Ribbon Panel on Outdoor Recreation was meeting. They're going around the state, about half a dozen of these such meetings. Steve Theringer, our representative, is on that, along with George Harris from the NMTA. So I briefed encouraging them to support the Marine Tourism Bill and also to continue to protect the RCO money, which is the boat ramp money and other accounts like that. Jim Heckman, his wife from Goldstar, by the way, was there doing the same thing, testifying. So it was a good session. Tomorrow I'll be at the PDD and the RCMB, the typical meetings. Next Wednesday, I'll be down in Tumwater at the WASDOT Aviation. They're going around the state with four workshops, and this is to start getting ready what they're going to require for the next biennium for airport projects and what monies are going to be available, et cetera. So I'll be down there for that. And the last thing, I talked to Jim Mopin again yesterday about insurance. He said he'd be willing to come to one of our workshops. This is in regard to independent contractor liability insurance. So if you'd like, I'll see if he can make it to our next workshop and just be here to answer any questions. It's very enlightening what he told me yesterday. So that's all.
Okay, any other public comments?
Two comments. I'm surprised on the roofing contract that some of the warranty is only a year. I don't know what's normal in that industry, but I've seen some 1 year roofing contracts and outfit out of Aberdeen at $17,200. I never did. I was a private individual. That's a long ways if he actually lives in Aberdeen. His mobilization costs over $1,000. That's kind of scary. So you wonder what you're getting. Secondly, if I may say, on a termination for breach on this IT contract, 30 days isn't bad, but if you just have a little portion in there that just talks about performance, failure to perform, that's all you need. And 30 days is pretty standard. You got to give them a little time to, if they do have a problem, you got to give them enough time to perform, and if they've got all these other school districts, it can't be too bad. And I really realize there's a lot of hackers out there. I've dealt with a lot of hackers before. That's a problem. It's hard to find really good, and really good IT people that are really smart. They're really expensive. Really expensive. So if you can get what you need for this amount, it's not a bad deal.
Thank you, Vigo.
Yeah.
Any other public comments? Okay, commissioner comments.
Kind of going off what Larry said, I was looking at that letter that Joni sent. Did everybody got that? Mm-hmm. Copy that. And she and I did a pretty long, extensive sit down and kind of reviewed all of her stuff from the earlier years. And I'd love to get a primer from Jim as far as what our exposure is and does car insurance cover certain aspects of it or not. And
I've also asked Carolyn to maybe put something together.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But I just, as a commissioner, I have no idea what, I mean, you can't kill all of our exposure, I know that. So I don't know where the line should be on that. So getting as much information as possible would be good.
It was interesting, Jim, I won't say the name of the individual, but a single person, Marine Trade, wanted to work on boats down at Sea Marine. And Sea Marine wouldn't let her on their property without liability insurance. Mm-hmm. So she got liability insurance from Jim, and after 6 months called him up to cancel it. And he said, well, why do you want to do that? You leave in the community or something? He said, no, I'm going down to Boat Haven to work. And we don't need it down there. And he tried to convince her that, yes, you do. This is your protection. Mm-hmm. But she still canceled it. So. But he, I think having him here.
Yeah, I think it'd be good.
Yeah.
Vigo?
One other quick question. What's the timetable for the budget process?
Well, backwards planning has to be adopted before 1 December. And we have to do a public hearing, so we usually set that up for the second Wednesday of November so that we have one more week meeting just in case the commission wants to, you know, have one more shot at it. We're going to have a draft budget by the second meeting of September.
Hopefully.
You know, supervisors have pretty much got a lot of the information back to Amy. There's one that's still due out. And so we're putting that together. You know, we're at that point where, like, we got the assessor coming at the next workshop. You know, we're going to need the commission to say, okay, you're going to take the 1% property tax and we factor that in or not. You know, mortgage rates, yard rates, all those things, what do you want to do? And what we normally do is we'll do, like, maybe here's what it looks like with no property tax increase, here's the 1% tax increase, but we've got some bank capacity, so here, if we took our bank capacity, here's what the budget would look like, and, you know, present that. So
it'll give us October to kick it around more, too.
It'll be the draft will be posted on our website and everything.
Is he coming to the meeting or the workshop?
Workshop. We're a little bit different from the same kind of companies. They can go to the new year, but we have to have ours adopted and on file with the treasurer of the county.
Right.
So, Larry, could you send an email to the Marine Trades Association about the insurance issue that this is going to be discussed? And,
sure.
And so they're fully on board with.
I offered to come speak to the next meeting for the board about it.
Yeah, they didn't have a meeting. It just,
I know.
They didn't approve.
So,
but if you could send an email, that would be good. Sure.
Probably have to change our venue.
That's all I had.
Okay. The only meeting that I attended between the last one and here was the energy lunch at. We had an energy lunch meeting. We had the guy that does the bulk power purchases for BPA came up to talk about how power gets distributed on the peninsula. And I mean, that sounds like a really dry topic, but it's interesting how the energy lunches, it packed the room. The community center was just chock full of people. And we had a meeting in the morning discussing basically that, bulk power purchases and the local energy lunch programming and people that are coming to it are getting enough attention that we had a couple of guys that built a big wind farm on Vancouver Island get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to drive down here to attend our 8 o'clock meeting. So in other words, it's an event, it's a thing that's happening. It's getting a little bit of momentum as far as locally produced energy, and it's basically because the port sponsored it.
Yeah, one word of caution on wind generated power. This is well over a decade ago. I thought it'd be pretty nifty if we were a test site for a single windmill down at Point Hudson. And the community came unglued in the negative.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was here. I remember that. I think the tide and the winds are changing. We had actually quite a few people that are really not quite supportive of them. I haven't heard any negatives. But they're not going to be in the port or on the school.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that takes care of it. There's no executive session, so we'll now adjourn this second monthly meeting.
It was only two times, 28 minutes.